You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 165 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled 13 Lectures, entitled Unifying Humanity Spiritually Through the Christ Impulse, translated by Christian von Arnim. This is Lecture 4, given in Dornach, on the 28th of December, 1915. I attempted yesterday to draw attention to an important fact in the context of the Christ problem, a fact which undoubtedly has a surprising aspect. The fact that a whole swathe of wisdom has actually disappeared and is only known about today in a few fragments, in a few remains. Something from one of the remains was presented here yesterday, namely the start of the books of Jude. Now, we have to ask ourselves, can wisdom which existed simply disappear like that? Can there just be external reasons for such a disappearance? I made a comparison. I said that it was conceivable that everything of ours that is printed and in existence could be burned, that all that remained were the writings of our opponents, from which people could, at a later time, reconstruct what we said. Now, such a case could certainly occur. However, it is not actually an hypothesis which we can just put like that. Because just imagine for a minute that all the books were suddenly to disappear. There would still be many of us, at least we may assume that to be the case, who know what is written in the books, and who could continue to speak about it without needing the writings of our opponents. In this way, our wisdom would be able to be handed on. In order for the matter completely to disappear, it would be necessary that in a certain way, the ability to understand the matter also gradually disappeared, the ability to retain a memory of the matter in order to implant it in each new generation. But that is what must have happened at the time. It must have happened in a certain way at the time that people lost the ability to understand something like the gnosis of Valentinus, like the content of the Pistis Sophia writings, like the content of the books of Jude, and so on. And that is what really did happen. We do have to imagine that on the broad basis of the ancient heritage, which came to expression in more ancient times as primitive clairvoyance, and then gradually withered and dimmed, that on this basis a higher knowledge also developed, a spiritual knowledge which was, however, only maintained by a few who were trained in the mysteries, but which did exist in a wider setting. And we further have to imagine that through the gradual paralysis of these abilities to understand these things, the whole matter not only began to be forgotten, but to disappear. People simply no longer had the ability within Western culture to understand these things. That was the only way in which that wisdom could be lost. So that we can truly say, when we look at the time which directly preceded and followed the mystery of Golgotha, we look at a time in which to the greatest extent, ancient abilities disappear and people work out of something fresh, something new. We can indeed say, as human development progressed toward the mystery of Golgotha, there was a dimming, disappearance of a very particular perspective, a way of thinking of a spiritual kind, through which it would have been possible to understand the entry of Christ into the world as a spiritual being. So, just at the time at which Christ unites with earth development, the knowledge disappears, through which the nature and essence of Christ could have been understood in a real deeper sense. That is an important fact. I have also already at various times in our reflections referred to something that is very important. I said the annunciation of Christ as such is not something which was completely new with the event of Golgotha. No, Christ was referred to as the coming one already in the mysteries. There were teachings in the mysteries that Christ would come. This Christ being was understood in the sense of the spiritual wisdom which has disappeared. But these mysteries had gradually fallen into ruin, so that just at the time when Christ came, the time approached in which human beings were least able to speak about this Christ. We can see this not just in everything I have indicated just now. We can also see it in everything that has remained from people who wanted to conceive of the Christ mystery out of what was fresh, what was new. Right in the first centuries of Christian development, we have such great minds as, for example, Clement of Alexandria and Origen, two eminent minds. If we wish to characterize them from a particular perspective, Clement of Alexandria, who followed after the Gnostics, when Gnosis had already dimmed, equally Origen, then we have to say that they strove to understand the true nature of the mystery of Golgotha. On the one hand, we are dealing with Christ, that they still knew. This Christ can only be understood as a spiritual being who is connected with spiritual, with supersensory impulses. This Christ descends from cosmic regions of the spirit. They no longer knew properly how the ancient Gnosis had been able to understand Christ. But they knew that he has to be understood as a spiritual being with spiritual abilities. That is what they knew about Christ. On the other hand, Jesus was an historical figure for them. The appearance of Jesus was an historical fact for them. A given number of years ago, a personality was born in a certain part of Asia Minor, Jesus, who was the bearer of Christ, a person in whom God was present. That became a riddle for them. In historical developments, we are dealing with an historical figure, they said to themselves. In our understanding of the Spirit, we are dealing with Christ. How should the unity of both be thought? And we see a struggle in such eminent, such great minds as are Clement of Alexandria and Origen, a struggle to understand how Christ is in Jesus, is in him. If we look first at Clement of Alexandria, who was head of the catechetical school of Alexandria where the Christian teachers were trained, if we look at this important figure, we find the following among what this figure taught. Clement of Alexandria told himself, quote, Christ belongs to those forces which were already at work in the creation of the earth. Naturally, he is part of the spiritual world. He entered earth development through the body of Jesus of Nazareth, So Clement of Alexandria first looked at Christ as a spiritual being, sought to understand him in spiritual regions. Now, Clement of Alexandria also knew the following, which we have often previously emphasized. He knew that Christ was actually always there for human beings, but not in earth regions. Only those could reach him who developed forces in themselves through the mysteries by means of which they could leave the body. When they, those people, left their body through the mystery forces and entered the spiritual regions, they recognized Christ and experienced him as the one who would come. Clement of Alexandria knew that. He knew that Christ was spoken of in the ancient mysteries as the coming one, who is not yet united with earth development. He expressed it like this. People were undoubtedly inspired to anticipate the coming of Christ. And he went as far as to say, what could be prepared for the descent of Christ in particular was cultivated in two centers of the spiritual development of humanity. Clement of Alexandria said, it was cultivated, on the one hand, by Moses and the prophets. What entered the world through Moses and the prophets, he said, was such preparation. Human beings were first to learn what came through Moses and the prophets, so that they could then, with the help of their own sentiments, develop a feeling, "We have Christ." That is what they were to imagine. However, he knew nothing of the ancient Gnostic wisdom, or at least he did not use it. But he said about what entered human abilities through Moses and the prophets that it was preparation. And then, this is very important, the second thing which Clement of Alexandria said was to act as preparation alongside Moses and the prophets was the Greek philosophers, Plato and Aristotle, Greek philosophy. He said, in so many words, Moses and the prophets and the Greek philosophers existed to prepare humanity for the event, for the fact of the mystery of Golgotha. And Origen, in turn, said to himself, we are dealing with Christ, with the Christ who can be understood using spiritual forces as a spiritual being. We are dealing with the historical Jesus, with that figure who once existed as a real figure in the sensory world. How can the two be combined, the God and the human being? How is God-man created? And Origen worked out his own theory. He told himself, the God cannot just live like that in the physical human being, but there must first be a special soul in Jesus, so that this soul can mediate between the God and the human being, that is, between the God as a pure spiritual being and the physical human being. He inserted the soul. And so he distinguished in Jesus Christ between the God, the pure pneuma being, the pure spiritual being, then between the psyche, the soul, and finally between the physical body of Jesus of Nazareth. So, he tried to gain an understanding of how Christ could be in Jesus of Nazareth. He no longer had the ancient gnosis to be able to understand Christ dwelling on earth, and Christ uniting himself with earth evolution. People had to work with what was fresh, what was new. They made great efforts to do that. So, just at the time that Christ had united himself with earth development as a real being, human beings had the greatest difficulty in understanding this fact at all. The ability to do so existed to the least possible extent. And Clement of Alexandria had at least a trace of an understanding why that was so. He told himself, quote, what was it that inspired these ancient mystery people? The ancient mystery people were inspired, Clement of Alexandria told himself, because Christ also had an effect on them, but transcendentally, when they had come out of themselves. That happened, close quote, as Clement of Alexandria says quite clearly, continue quote, because he sent them the angels. Close quote. So, Clement of Alexandria more or less said it. When there is reference in the Old Testament to the appearance of an angel, it means that Christ has sent this angel. Indeed, Clement of Alexandria expressly lets it shine through. When Yahweh appears to Moses in the burning bush, it is actually also Christ who appears there, who appears through the physical, soul, spiritual phenomenon. So that Clement of Alexandria expresses it clearly. In antiquity, before the mystery of Golgotha, Christ appeared to human beings through angels. If they could develop the ability to hear the message of the angels, they were actually facing Christ himself in higher worlds, having left their bodies as initiates who had left their bodies. That far Clement of Alexandria was still able to go. And then he said that also was still preserved in him. Quote, as time progressed, Christ made the transition from being of angelic nature to being in the nature of the Son. He became the Son, S-O-N. Previously, he was able to manifest, reveal himself through the angels, or as an angel, as a multitude of angels, as many angels. When he wanted to appear to one person as one angel and another person as another angel, he appeared in many forms. Then he appeared in the one form as the Son. Close quote. A very important element occurs here. Take good note. This is exceptionally important. Clement of Alexandria takes the view that Christ was already present before the mystery of Golgotha in spiritual regions. He was so far that he could announce his presence through angels, through messengers. But then he went further. He went as far as being able to manifest himself as the Son. That is exceptionally important. What actually enters human understanding in this way? If we go through the whole of ancient Gnosis, there is something peculiar. If I wanted to draw a diagram of this Gnosis, for example, I could say the following. This Gnosis imagined a person in evolution which started from the Father, the primal Father, from the so-called silence, or Sige, Sigma Iota Gamma Eta, Sige, from the primal Spirit. The ancient Gnostics set out 30 different such stages. They called them eons. I could set out 30 here. Then a second stream, in a sense. Whereas the first stream is a spiritual one, they indicated a second stream, which belongs to the soul. Within this stream, they knew two main primal eons, in Christ and in Sophia. Then there were a number of further eons, and they set out a third stream, the demiurge with matter, and these came together and formed the human being. We can draw such diagrams from the way of thinking which the Gnostics had. These ideas are not completely unreal, because humans are complicated beings. Once, when I spoke about the number of sevenfold parts in the human being, it is contained in one of the Norwegian cycles, I think it is called titled Man in the Light of Occultism, Theosophy, and Philosophy, our dear friends were quite disconcerted at the number of differences which actually have to be sought in the human being. These differences remind us of what the Gnostics already knew from their perspective. But if we look closely at Gnosis, there is always one thing. The concept of time plays little part. Gnosticism can be expressed through spatial diagrams. The concept of time does not play any particular role. At least there is no meaningful understanding of it. And in that respect, it is a step forward from Gnosis to Clement of Alexandria. Even if the whole comprehensive fullness of spiritual wisdom was lost, it was nevertheless a step forward to Clement of Alexandria, in that he introduced the concept of time into the development of Christ, and said, Christ announced his presence, was able to announce his presence in earlier times through angels, then as the Son, because he himself progressed. Development was introduced. That is the important thing. It cannot be stressed often enough that the purpose of Western cultural development was to introduce the concept of time into our understanding of the world in the right way, to understand the idea of development in the right way. It is of such great importance, it is of overriding importance to look at development and to see how Christ originally could only announce his presence through the angels, and then after he passed through the mystery of Golgotha, he appeared as the Son. Through the angels, he is the messenger of something that is external to the world, which does indeed penetrate the world, but which, if it is to be recognized, must be recognized outside the world, a herald. Later, when he appears as the Son, he penetrates everything. Just as a son is of the same blood, is one with his father in the physical world, so the spiritual Son must be imagined as of one being with the Father in the spiritual world. Being a Son is something different from just being an angel. So if this being reveals himself as the Son, it is progress with regard to the earlier revelation, where he was able to reveal himself only as an angel, as a herald. So in Christianity, there was a kind of further-reaching understanding than the understanding within ancient Gnosis. But what I might call the after-effects of Gnosis were required to express even just that which Clement of Alexandria said. When gnosis gradually disappeared altogether, it was no longer even possible to say what Clement and Origen had said. People increasingly found their way into those impulses which were the impulses of a later time, the purely materialistic impulses. And so it came about that the teaching of Origen was condemned. It was declared to be heretical. The element which caused it to be declared heretical was, namely, that people no longer wanted an understanding of these things which originated in human beings themselves and their powers. People felt that must no longer exist. But how do we see these things now? How must it appear to us? After all, we can see that an ancient spiritual wisdom had spread on the basis of ancient clairvoyance. It was there and gradually disappeared. Even if related to a transcendental being, such spiritual wisdom contained knowledge about Christ. Just when Christ had descended to earth, this knowledge disappeared. The real Christ was united with the earth. The knowledge about Christ disappeared at this time. You have another situation on a large scale, which I ask you simply to observe properly. We can look across the earth of the time, across the earth before the mystery of Golgotha. The further we go back, the more knowledge about Christ we find, even if it is the Christ who must be thought of in suprasensory regions. But he is a being who can only be communicated through angels. That is evolution. This knowledge, these ideas about Christ, spread across many people. Christ lives as the inspirer of many people. Evolution. This knowledge gradually recedes, disappears, is dimmed, and everything that was previously distributed is concentrated in the one being, in Jesus of Nazareth. Think of evolution as one drop of Christ's inwardness in one mystery priest, in a second, a third, and a fourth one, and so on within evolution. In each of the mystery initiates, we would find that they had something of Christ within them when they left their body with their spirit. Christ is multiplied in them. Then everything disappears. And in one place, in the body of Jesus of Nazareth, everything is drawn together which was distributed, involution. All the things specifically which had been withdrawn from all the others appeared in the one body. And so we see that what was distributed, what lived in evolution, had to disappear from the earth in that it was concentrated in the one point, in the body of Jesus of Nazareth. That is the important fact. Evolution stops within the most significant involution. So, now, the time begins in which Christ lives with the earth. But the knowledge about Christ does not live in the earth, in which the knowledge of Christ first has to develop again. Now, great difficulties arise. We have already indicated them. On the one hand, we have Jesus. On the other, we have Christ. And consider that the ancient wisdom of the connection was lost in humans. The whole period knew nothing of what the human being is actually like. Only now do we start to differentiate the human being again into physical body, etheric body, sentient soul, and so on. We are only just starting with that again. We distinguish once again in the individual human being the physical earthly element, which continues in the line of heredity, and the higher spiritual element, which comes down from spiritual worlds. Origen did not know that. Clement of Alexandria did not know that. They did not know about the soul and spiritual entity and the physical part of each human being walking on earth. That is why they found it difficult to understand the individual component elements of the Christ being. Knowledge of the human being had been lost. hence this difficulty in understanding the God-man. And thus the knowledge about Jesus and the knowledge about Christ diverged evermore. And it is incredibly important for an understanding of our time to realize how this in turn has an effect on our time, to the extent that the content of our spiritual science has to appear in it. It is incredibly important to look particularly at this divergence of Jesus and Christ. This is an incredibly serious and incredibly important matter, and we encounter it in so many different ways. We have seen the Christmas plays pass before us. In the one Christmas play, we still felt something of Christ. In the second one, the pure figure of Jesus. In the first one, in the simple and primitive one. We can say the Jesus child, that is the starting point of Jesus, has conquered people's minds. It is only from the high Middle Ages onward that people begin to look to the child. Previously, Christians attended Mass, heard about the mystery that Christ went through death, the Pauline teaching, and so on. But the Bible was not popular. The Bible was only in the hands of the priests. The faithful had to attend Mass, which furthermore was provided for them in Latin. But there was no participation in the processes of the Holy Service. And the things which are contained in the Gospels only gradually conquered minds and souls. And thus such plays, such presentations of the appearance of Jesus and so on, could only be offered to people really properly from the high Middle Ages onward. Today we tend to think, the mystery of Golgotha happened, and from that moment onward people knew something about the mystery of Golgotha. Well, what they knew was that Christ had died on the cross. The people primarily experienced the Easter happenings. But the Christmas happenings were quite unknown. They only very slowly and gradually crept into the minds, the hearts of people. That was the outer side, how people began to learn through images what happened in Palestine. It was only gradually through the dramatic performances that people began to have an idea of what happened in Palestine. That was the aspect of the Jesus mystery. At the same time, just consider, at the same time, on the other side, the mystics Tauler and Meister Eckhart and the others sought Christ again through mysticism. So we have on the one hand the initial rise of the Christmas plays. Jesus is taught as outwardly as possible, namely in direct outer presentation. Jesus is sought. Let me read that again. Jesus is sought as outwardly as possible, namely in direct outer presentation. Jesus is sought. And the mystics seek Christ. They seek to develop their soul to such an extent that they see Christ rise in themselves. They seek to experience the wholly unformed, wholly distanced from the world, purely spiritual Christ in their soul. Mysticism on the one side, the Christmas plays on the other side, Jesus and Christ sought at the same time by two different, greatly divergent paths. What in origin was a theoretical difficulty, not being able to combine Christ with Jesus, that we can see out there in the villages. Jesus is shown to the people as a child. The profound mystics seek Christ in that they want to guide their own soul as far as inwardly sensing, almost as far as inwardly touching Christ. But where is the connection? Where is it, the connection? Things are happening in parallel. Think how far with the simple person, the simple eye, sees in the Christmas plays, is removed from the profound mysticism of a Meister Eckhart or Johannes Tauler. But the beginnings of the Christmas plays fall into this period, and mysticism also continues. And in our time today, just think what the whole mystery of Golgotha has become for many theologians. Take those who are the most progressive theologians. What are they actually looking at? They see that at one time at the start of our calendar, in Nazareth or Bethlehem or somewhere, a select human being was born, so select as to be able gradually to fulfill the connection between human beings and the spiritual world within himself, a noble human being, the most noble human being there is, a human being so noble that we might say he was almost, and furthermore, you see, this is where a problem arises. People do not know quite what to do, what else there is to say in respect of the fact that he was perceived wholly as a god in the course of Christianity. They squirm and twist and come out with all the various oikonisms and harnackisms, which are so, well, it is beyond belief, but people want to be clever in some way and still have the possibility of understanding Jesus as one thing and Christ as some form of Christ. So people take the Gospels. They are, of course, embarrassed as modern people to believe in miracles. So they cut what can be cut, and thus construct something highly naturalistic, something for which there is a reasonable explanation. And when they come to the event of Jerusalem and the death on the cross, and then they come to the event of Jerusalem and the death on the cross, this is still all right when we get to the death, but it is no longer all right when we come to the resurrection. People then go as far as Harnack does, for example, who says, well, this resurrection, this tomb from which Christ is said to have arisen, the Easter mystery, yes, well, the Easter mystery, we have to bring ourselves to accept the knowledge that this Easter mystery originated in the garden by Calvary. The Easter mystery arose there. The thought of the resurrection came from there, and that is what we have to keep in mind, and in all other respects, not look too closely at what actually happened there. That is where the view of resurrection had its origin. Isn't that something? Read Harnack's title, Das Wesen des Christentums, The Nature of Christianity. That is where you will find these extraordinary thoughts about the resurrection. I once spoke about it at a meeting of the Giordano Bruno League in a certain town, and said, it is a strange thought, is it not, that people want to deal with the idea of the resurrection in such a way that they say, we do not want to go near what actually happened there, but want to point out that the belief in the resurrection, the belief in the Easter mystery, climbed out of that grave. In response, someone said to me, quote, Harnack can't have written that. That is little short of Catholic. That is little short of Catholic superstition. That is the same as if one still were to believe that the holy robe of Trier had some meaning. That is superstition. Harnack cannot have written that. Close quote. Well, Harnack did write it, and there was little I could do, I did not have the book to hand, other than to write the gentleman a card the next day telling him that it was written on page so-and-so. These are things which become difficult. People cannot do it when they are asked to find the way from Jesus to Christ. Someone once told me, quote, we are no longer able to make anything of Christology. We modern theologians, we really only have need for a Jesuology, close quote. It was he who said it, not I. A pity that the term Jesuit is already in use, because actually the confessors of modern theology should be called Jesuits. Please note, I did not say it, but a person who confessed to be a modern theologian. Well then, that is the one side of the story. The other side is this, that a number of modern theologians in turn adhere more to Christ. They study the Gospels. They take certain statements in the Gospels, not in the way that those whom I have just told you about take what reasonable people believe about another person, even if he is a divine person. But here people are unclear when they refer to a divine person, how far they should go with the application of divine, a noble person, but greater than Socrates, a slight problem here. Well, those are the one lot, the Jesuologists, because theologians is a word that cannot really be applied to them. Theology as meaning wisdom about the divine. But the, in quotes, divine part is precisely what is to be got rid of here. Then there are the others, they take these claims a bit more seriously. They find, with regard to certain statements, that it is not acceptable that the one who made them is seen merely as an ordinary person. After all, there are statements in the Gospels which cannot simply be attributed, in all honesty, to a person, a mere person. And they furthermore take the story of the resurrection seriously, and so on. They make themselves Christologists, in contrast to the Jesuologists. But now they reach a different conclusion. Read the book Ecce Deus, Behold the God, I suppose, and other books, readers aside, I said that, and readers aside, and other books, and you will see that they say, quote, if we read the Gospels honestly, we cannot say that the Gospels refer to a human being. They refer to a God, a real proper God, close quote. These people, in turn, lose Jesus. And they lose him seriously because they now say, quote, the Gospels refer everywhere to a God, but that God cannot have existed, so we have to retain Christ, close quote. Those people speak about Christ, but not as someone who lived on earth. Christology without Jesuology, that is the other direction. But the two directions cannot come together. And so it really is the case today that those who refer to Christ have lost Jesus, and those who refer to Jesus have lost Christ. Christ has become an unreal God, and Jesus an unreal human being. They will inevitably continue along these tracks unless something else is added. That which is added must be spiritual science, which in turn can understand how Christ lived in Jesus. And that is basically one of the most important points in the teachings of spiritual science, that it can lead to an understanding of how Christ, by way of the two Jesuses, really could become the being who placed himself at the center of the earth development of humanity. Because spiritual science has a concept of what the human being is, how spiritual, soul, and physical aspects intermesh in the human being. So, building on this, we can in turn understand how Christ comes together with Jesus. That is, of course, complicated and not easy to understand, but it can be understood. And so you can see how out of the origins, those things must in turn be restored through spiritual science, which were lost to humanity, including in relation to an understanding of the mystery of Golgotha. When Christ appeared in the world, it was not possible to understand him, such understanding which must gradually be reacquired. His work is based in reality, but the starting points are everywhere, and such starting points can be found even in the simplest Christmas play. What is it that is presented? What is presented with particular clarity as far as the Paradise plays are concerned? Is how a human being enters the world about whom it only becomes clear through peripheral events that he is Jesus. The human being enters the world as a child. I said that the Paradise play is connected with that, the start of earth development, the mystery of Golgotha. How so? Here we have to take into consideration how at the start of earth development, human beings were subject to the Luciferic temptation. In that way, they became a different being from what they would have become if they had progressed ordinarily. So, if, speaking symbolically, we had Adam before us outside Paradise, he is a different being to the being he was destined to be before the Luciferic temptation. How is that revealed? Imagine that Lucifer had not approached human beings. They would be living without the Luciferic impulse and would live quite differently in their etheric body. When human beings pass through the portal of death and still have their etheric body and then shed it, the etheric body remains behind, but all the things are imprinted in it, which human beings do and think as a result of the Luciferic temptation. You see, human beings die and pass through the portal of death. The physical body is given over to the elements. A few days later, the etheric body detaches itself from the being of the person. The human being then proceeds on his or her various ways. But the etheric body contains what it has become as a result of the way that human beings think, feel, and act, as they must do after the luciferic temptation. So, now, imagine the earth. The human physical body is put in the earth and is given over to the elements of the earth, but its etheric body remains linked with the earth. So, we have the etheric bodies of human beings, which are present in the earth's atmosphere. They are different to how they would be if they had not been subject to the luciferic temptation. Everything I have said elsewhere about the etheric body, of course, relates to them. But what I say today also relates to them, so that we can say a human being is embedded in the earth. But that which human beings leave behind on earth, what has become their etheric body during life, is more arid, woody than it would be if the luciferic temptation had not happened. More woody, arid. This difference really does exist. Imagine that the luciferic temptation had never happened. Then people would leave behind, would leave a much more youngified etheric body behind on death, a much greener etheric body, as it were. They leave a much more arid, dried out etheric body behind through the luciferic temptation than would have been the case without the luciferic temptation. That already comes to expression in the legend that the wooded tree of paradise grows out of Adam's grave. But what lives in the earth there lived before the mystery of Golgotha in the luciferically infected etheric body. That was precisely the element into which the phantom of the body of Jesus of Nazareth went to redeem it, as I once indicated in the Karlsruhe lectures. So, now imagine Adam's grave. Adam given over as a physical body to the elements of the earth. Coming out of Adam's grave, the wooded etheric body, as the representative of that which is luciferically infected in the human being and remains after death. That is also the wood on which the human being can be crucified. And this crucifixion comes about in that the phantom of Jesus of Nazareth remains behind after the mystery of Golgotha, combining with the earth with his help. That is expressed in the legend, when it is told that the wood was passed from generation to generation, and in turn formed the wood of the cross at Golgotha. This image is an image which corresponds to a real fact, namely that through the crucifixion, the phantom of Jesus of Nazareth, combined with what lives etherically in the earth, in terms of all the luciferically infected etheric bodies, which were of course spread out and had become diluted and dissolved, but which were still there in their forces, is very important. Profoundly deep fact that we are considering here, which casts a light on mysteries of the earth. But how is the relationship between human beings and this luciferically infected etheric body established? Because they enter into this world in which they start as children. It has not yet, of course, happened when they are children. That is why we can truly see the non-luciferic human being when we look at children with the right feelings as they enter the world. And if we are able to look at children with the right feelings as they enter the world, we can see human beings as they are related to Christ. That is the feeling which was to be created in those to whom Jesus was given in the Christmas play, to feel what I indicated right at the beginning in the first pages of the small text about the progress of the human being and humanity, where I spoke about the first 3 years, about this arrival. Because if that which imbues human beings at that time could infuse them in the middle of their lives, that is what I indicated, then we would have an idea of the way in which Christ lived in Jesus. Being able to look in this way at what is not yet luciferically infected in the child, that is precisely what can happen in the Christmas play. And think what all of this ultimately represents. It actually represents something colossal when we look at the child in this way. I drew attention in this small text to the way we are more clever in youth, albeit unconsciously more clever, because we only have to build our body gradually, something we can no longer do later on. We are much cleverer, we are much wiser than we are later on, as we pervade the human being, the essence of the human being. But there is nothing Luciferic yet. By working inwardly in this way when we are children, up to the point to which we can subsequently remember back, we are working on the delicate refinement of the body. We work there in accordance with infinitely wise laws, of which we, subsequently, have not the least idea in our luciferically and aramonically infiltrated thinking. When we are at work within this being, we are still free from everything which enters later on when we experience the world in our body. We are free of all differences, even the great differences between male and female. We do not yet, as children, live within the male and female aspect. We are not yet within differences of status and race, are not yet within national differences. We're human, purely human. The reality in which we are as children is the one in which once lived even those who now oppose one another in war through something which they first experience outwardly, through hate. That we face one another in the world in hate as belonging to different nations only comes about through the forces into which we enter in life together with the physical body. Before they have lived their way fully into the physical body, children still live in those things which are beyond differences of nation and status. They live in those things in which souls can truly live wherever they are born on earth. Just think, people can fight one another in terrible ways, face one another in battle, shoot and kill one another, and those who shoot and kill one another can pass through the portal of death together in the community of Christ, in that of which they are a part when they are not yet marked with the differences between human beings. The things which face off in hate are only acquired by human beings in the physical body. They have nothing to do with what is outside the physical body. There is a great deal that our present time can learn, particularly our present time, by finding its way back to the veneration of Jesus in the time in which he was represented as a child, when he has not yet entered into what differentiates people and brings them to quarrel and strife. War and disputes only arise through what people experience when they become something different from what the child is about whom we speak at Christmas. The things which are acted out in the Christmas plays represent the human being truly connected with the cosmic powers, but in such a way that outwardly, on the physical plane, something is revealed in unique form, which does not get into a quarrel, which those who fight one another outwardly to the death can in the same way carry in their hearts. There is something immensely profound in this aspect, being placed before humanity, in the Jesus child from the line of Nathan. So that human beings are touched by the aspect through which they enter the world without the shadow of differentiation, before they have entered into nations, into other differences, differences which they do not enter into until they coexist with the body. The Jesus idea, on the one hand, which can only come to full expression in the Jesus child, touches the Christ idea. The latter comes to expression if, in purity, we can grasp in Jesus, between the age of 30 and 33, what now is also spiritual, the Christ being. In a dual way, through the Jesus from the line of Nathan and from the line of Solomon, a body has been prepared which can now stand aside from everything that causes differences between human beings, and Christ can only be revealed in such a body. Thus we can see the Jesus idea, in our spiritual scientific sense, as I have indicated in the booklet about the progress of the human being and humanity, can see the Christ idea and how they grow together. That is the greatest, the most significant requirement of our time. Hitherto, people only had one Christmas and one Easter, but they did not belong together, because Easter is a Christ festival, Christmas is a Jesus festival. Easter and Christmas only come together if we can understand how Christ and Jesus belong together. The bridge between Christmas and Easter is built by spiritual science. And a bridge is built from the simple shepherd's play to the most subtle understanding which may be acquired if we study spiritual science so far that we can find Christ through it. But we have to have the ability to go with the attitude of the shepherds, not with the attitude of the innkeepers. The contrast between materialism and spiritualism is set out in a wonderful way in the, in quotes, innkeepers and, in quotes, shepherds. And that is basically the major question of our time, whether people want to be innkeepers or shepherds. A large part of the events in our time have come about because people are innkeepers. Being an innkeeper is widespread throughout the world. We must try to be shepherds again, to become shepherds. But even among the shepherds, there will still be some doubters. And when one person says, "I believe I can see a light over there," meaning I perceive something spiritual, someone else will nevertheless come along and say, "That is all just fantasy." That may be. But if people can develop now in themselves the aspects which are not based on what can be acquired on earth, but can find the connection with the things which human beings have brought in their inner being from the spiritual, the heavenly worlds, then they will be able to be shepherds. People today stand too firmly in the house in which they have what the innkeeper has, the things that have been introduced from what is of the earth. That can only be measured with earthly values. But those who still have a certain connection with the things that flow and pulse through the spiritual world, who have retained the shepherd nature within themselves, they shall find the paths. Be able to find the paths where basically, with outer knowledge, we only find outer appearances. We will gradually begin to understand Christmas when we learn to distinguish the innkeeper nature from the shepherd nature. And when we know how much there is of an innkeeper nature in our time. But there is a small matter which we will have to try and deal with. We do, of course, have to distinguish between the innkeeper and shepherd natures. We are, after all, surrounded by a whole lot of innkeepers. Wherever we go, we are surrounded by a whole lot of innkeepers and feel quite the shepherd. Naturally, we always feel ourselves to be shepherds. But we do not have to get over it, and should at least search a little bit for the innkeeper element we bear within ourselves, and not see ourselves purely as shepherds. Sometimes we will have to ask ourselves, "Can I already see the light which is to come?" We will have to cultivate everything that can bring the feeling to life in us, of being able to celebrate Christmas in our hearts on the basis of this new spiritual direction. Seeking the light in the darkness, and seeking, really wanting to seek, in the light, and in seeking, truly having the sentiment that just once is not enough, that we have to keep coming like the shepherds did, who also promise that they will return, that they do not want to let it be just once. Yes, there is a lot to learn still from this simple Christmas play in particular. And that is why I think it is good that we have started to cultivate among us a little also of this simplest form of the Christmas mystery, an experience in the simplest form of the Christmas mystery. Because spiritual scientific striving, in particular, will have to face many serious battles in the coming time. And only those will find the way who have truly learned to become shepherds through a spiritual understanding of the Christmas mystery with all the humility of the shepherds, but also with all the wise seeking of the shepherds who are connected with the world in loyalty. Let us inscribe this in our hearts, in our souls at this Christmas time. so that we become seeking shepherds to an ever greater extent, and learn in time to seek what is holy in the innermost soul mood of human beings, just as it was found out of the profane mood I characterized for you when the most solemn form of the Christmas play gradually arose out of carnival rather than holy entertainment. Let us try to seek the spiritual by building on precisely what the Christmas plays have shown us. Then we will find it in the right way as shepherds, not as innkeepers who have already lost, that is the symbolic message of the Christmas play, the connection with the Christmas child. That is something which is very necessary, very much necessary in our time in which materialism has taken hold of such large, large swaths of the external world, of inner human feeling, and in which a spiritual view of the world has such difficulty even just to find the right words, to say what the right words are in the face of the abused words which are spoken. The end of Lecture 4.